It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 13th of September 2014. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. On Saturday the 13th of September, Gary Bell talked to Amelia Lawley from the Waiheke Budgeting Service and Annie Carr from the Waiheke Dog Owners Group.
My first guest, and Amelia, welcome, and thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Amelia, you're the manager of the local budget advice service. So could you tell us a little bit about how it all works down there, how the services are provided, and what sorts of things you do for people on the island?
Sure. Okay, so we are a not-for-profit NGO. We get some funding from the government, but we're not a government organisation.
Yes.
We're not WINS.
Yes.
We're nothing to do with WINS. And we provide completely free, confidential advice and assistance and education around money and living on a low income.
Right.
Debt repayment. We provide advocacy. We deal with creditors on behalf of clients if they're being threatened or yes. feeling threatened. We are a counsellor for anyone who has sort of any issues that are underpinning the financial difficulties or that are being caused by the financial difficulties. A lot of times relationships fall to pieces if there's money worries. So
yeah, sure. mm-hmm.
our counsellor sees couples. And we have a food bank, which sadly and unfortunately is... a majority of our work is actually
oh, really?
Doing food parcels. Yeah,
have you seen trends around the usage of the food bank?
Yeah, I've been there coming up 3 years, and the prevalence of clients presenting needing food to get through the week because they've got a big bill or their rent's late or their car needs a waff has just skyrocketed. It's to the point where it actually makes me quite depressed that our core objective, which is actually educating people and teaching them how to budget, is secondary to actually just helping them to juggle their resources week by week.
Well, okay, so it's a game of survival from week to week for
sure,
a lot of people.
For sure, yeah.
On a percentage of your clients' basis, what would those folks in that scenario, what would they make up?
Oh, easily 70%.
Wow, that's amazing. Yep. And do you think that there's any particular things happening in our economy, without getting too political, obviously, at the moment, in our economy that is sort of causing some of that and causing some of those hardships, the environment?
The increase in cost of living, rents particularly. Rents are a killer.
Yes.
And food and petrol and services and just the fact that benefits aren't keeping up and wages aren't keeping up.
Right.
We have a low-wage economy and most of our clients are earning, if they're not on benefits, they're earning incredibly low wages.
Actually, there are some statistics. I think the census, the preliminary census report's out online now, if not the final report.
Mm.
And that makes quite sobering reading with regard to the average income on the island.
It really does.
Just off the top of my head, I mean, I don't want to be quoted on this, but I think, is it somewhere like half of our population are making sort of under 25,000
it's something
a year
like that, yeah.
or 21,000.
I remember, so. I haven't got the figures in my head either, but I remember my jaw dropped when I read it. I thought,
same
wow.
here, I was really surprised, and it made me wonder how those folks could afford to live in a place like Waiheke.
Well, they
honest.
Can't, that's the problem.
That's it, yeah.
You know, it's becoming thing. Increasingly impossible.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose that might be why we are seeing a wee bit of a drift of some folks that are now heading to the mainland or heading further south or north for an affordable lifestyle.
Yep, someone put it quite nicely, if not slightly cynically, economic cleansing is occurring in Waiheke.
Well, that's an interesting phrase. I haven't heard that one, but
it
speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
It really does. So are you linked into other services on the island?
Oh, so absolutely, yeah.
People need other services, you would navigate for them?
Yeah, absolutely. We collaborate really closely with many of the social services on Waiheke, particularly both the social workers, one at the Health Trust and one at the Holder. We work with Living Without Violence, the Health Trust. We are a member of WICOS, so we are actually one of the main services in that network.
Yes, yes.
And we also, have connections with the schools and the police. And, Waiheke is fantastic from that point of view in that it's everybody's very keen to collaborate for the best outcomes for clients.
Yes, yes. Yes, well, I mean, I do sort of am aware of that, that it is, given an island, there are very close links with a lot of services, and luckily people don't have to travel too far to access those services.
Yep.
So there are real benefits from that, that point of view as well.
Absolutely.
I think some things that I was really impressed with on your website, I had a look through, were some of the money-saving tips that you have in there for people.
Yeah.
And even though you might think, oh, you know, turning the light off or doing this or doing that, it doesn't seem like a lot, but over time it all adds up, doesn't it?
And it's amazing how, you know, if sometimes you feel like you're telling grandma how to suck eggs. I don't know where that expression came from. Every time I say it, I think, God, that's a ridiculous thing to say. But,
yes.
You know, people kind of do go, oh, yeah, I never thought of that. You know, just things like, you know, instead of chucking all that crap that comes in on a Sunday into your letterbox, all the gump from the supermarket, you know, go through it and see what's on special and go shopping accordingly. Plan a menu. I mean, and you sort of say things like that to people and they go, oh, yeah, I just don't have the organisation or the time, or I just don't think about it. I just run to the supermarket and grab stuff. It's like, it's about actually just sitting down and doing it.
And doing it too.
And I'm, you know, I give out the best advice in the world and I don't take it. It's just the little things that accumulate and do that they do save you money.
I think one of the biggest things that we've ever experienced over time with regard to really getting hit with some big bills has been heating. And I remember a few years ago we lived in a place in Wellington on a rather windy spot that got a lot of wind, and when the wind would blast over the house, it would effectively suck the heat right out of the house as the wind was going by, and we were getting $500-$600 heating bills a month, and it was horrendous.
That's not unusual here either,
you know. And so the thing about it is, on your website I see things like seal gaps around the windows or the doors and block off unused fireplaces. I mean, you know, that's the sort of stuff that actually is very hard to do. It makes a massive, that's probably one of the biggest things you can do to save yourself some money.
Yeah.
You know, and close windows and curtains and things like that. You
Especially
know?
In a place like Waiheke where there are a lot of batches that have been converted to year-round use, and they're actually not, they're not really fit for it and they weren't really designed for it.
Yes.
They're not insulated. They are sort of slightly shonky and sort of old and you
absolutely.
Know. And they're very difficult to heat.
Yes, and absolutely.
And I mean, there's some of those things wouldn't necessarily even work in those kind of places, but it's better than nothing, you know.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. I mean, the old house insulation thing's a big one, and I suppose that's why it's been it's a political issue as well.
And it makes my blood boil.
Yeah, and a number of houses around that, you know, don't have insulation in the ceiling or the floor or the walls for that matter, and I mean, we only had to think about all of our friends in Christchurch to know that, you know, a lot of people down there are not only living with, you know, cracks in the walls and the roof, but also there's, you know, there's all this material under the house that's built up, the liquefaction, and that just gets cold and it's horrible. So, look, it's a countrywide issue, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. And there are some woeful properties on this island. There are some terrible rental properties. It should be bold. But, you know, we're in this terribly unenviable position where, you know, to take some of those houses out of the rental market means that there aren't houses for people on low incomes to live in. So, you know, you're sort of stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea in terms of, you know, these houses aren't fit for habitation yet.
Yes.
Having somebody to habitate is better than living in your car.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. The other thing that actually impressed me when I got onto the website was the number of people involved in your your organisation down there. You've got quite a large team.
We do. Yeah, we do. We've got about 7 advisors. Yeah. The counsellor, me, and we've got a coordinator as well.
Yes.
And we've got an admin woman, and we've got a fantastic accountant.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's a lot of us.
Yeah, big team.
Milling about.
It's a really interest. So there's quite a list of names there, which I don't go through, but if anyone wants to have a look online and just see who the trustees are, the management team and the advisors and everybody else, it's all there to see. And these people really do, you know, they deserve great plaudits and all sorts of positive feedback.
And it's interesting because we're a very motley bunch. Like, we're all from different, you know, we're all incredibly different in our backgrounds and our worldviews, but we all get along incredibly well because we've got this shared vision and this shared drive.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And also, obviously, with regard to your funding, how do you get funded for what you do?
Okay, so we get core funding from the Ministry of Social Development.
Yes.
Thanks, Paula. And then we have several sort of funders that we go to each year that we, so far, touch wood, have been successful.
Yes.
In receiving grants from. So that's people like ASB Trust.
Yes.
Auckland Council. Lotteries. Recently Sky City. We were successful getting a grant for counselling for that. So we fundraising is obviously in any community organisation, NGO, it is a huge part of the work, and it's a constant stress. But so far we've been incredibly lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've had a lot of generosity from the from the from the community.
And yeah, for sure.
And I certainly see that, because also harking back to the website, and I'd encourage people to also have a look at the sponsors list. Mm. I mean, at the moment, in their regular contributors are well over 20, and they're both organisations and individuals. And I believe at Christmas time,
yeah, we're inundated. We're incredibly lucky,
yes,
that we live in a community which is so generous and so sort of care. Compassionate. Like, people really do, and it's interesting. It comes in waves. Like recently, with that Nigel Latter documentary airing on TV. A lot of people called up after that and were like, you know, this is just ridiculous that our country's in this situation, the people living the way they do. What can we do to help you?
I think it shocked everyone that watched that wasn't actually affected by it, you know what I mean? So I was just amazed by it, I really was. And it's an indictment on our society.
Oh, it is.
It really is. New Zealander, you wouldn't expect, you know.
Old egalitarian New Zealand.
You know what I mean? Yeah. People that visit New Zealand would not expect to see that if they looked at all the promotional material in the country. But reality is vastly different. So, if you've got your pen handy, I want to give you the bank account number for the Waiheke Budgeting Services Trust. So, grab your pen and anything you can write on. And it's it looks like a Kiwi bank account.
It is a Kiwi bank account. Yeah,
I've got Kiwi bank account too. So I recognise the numbers. It's 38-9007-038-039309. So that's Waiheke Budgeting Services Trust. It's 38-9007-038-039309. Now, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, Amelia, how do they do that? What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, they can send us a message on Facebook, or they can email us on our email address is on the website, or they can go to our website.
Yes.
Or they can call 372-6300, or they can just drop in.
Great.
Yeah, we're in Belgium Street, just opposite the market.
Yeah, and up on 24 Belgium Street up there, so it's not too far from where I frequent.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lovely spot there.
We do. We're so unbelievably fortunate to have that house.
It's a really good spot, isn't it? Yeah. Nice and handy to everything as well.
And it's got a great big garden, and it's really comfortable, and it's not... I mean, a big thing about... How we're trying to frame ourselves in terms of the community consciousness is that we're not a scary place where you come when you're sort of on your knees. We're actually, you know, it's a very positive environment, a very welcoming place.
Yes.
We're there to help you. We're not there to tell you how to live.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, are there any other key messages that you wanted to get over today, Amelia?
Parents, teach your children how to use money wisely. Financial literacy is so important. That's, you know, another real prong of our attack, if you like. We teach where we can in the community. Like, we teach up at the high school. We do financial literacy with the year 12 and 13s. We have worked in the primary schools. We always do something for Money Week, a seminar or some sort of workshop. You know, it's so important to educate young people before they get out into the world of credit and debt
easy debt
credit
trap.
And, you know, banks just wanting to ensnare them into ridiculous amounts of debt. You know, kids have got to understand the threat, the risks. And that's a real thing for me. I just, you know, I'm really adamant that message get through, because it's not taught in schools officially. It's not part of the curriculum yet, and it bloody should be.
Well, it certainly wasn't when I was at school either. I can still remember some of the pretty straightforward lessons we got, and it was never, money management was never part of it, and I can still remember vocational guidance. Even that was, do you like working with your hands? Do you like sitting inside? Okay, well, you can be a farmer or a policeman, or you can be a fireman or a pilot, and, you know, but things have changed dramatically now. But I think the financial literacy in our younger folks, I mean, I look at the television, I can see what the challenges are for parents. You know, there's got to have it now.
Absolutely. We're just consumer society run amok.
We are, aren't we? We are. And also, too, you know, there's probably the kids like to show off with other kids with their new gear, and they like to have the iPods and the new toys or whatever else. So they like to look as though they've got all the latest kids.
Oh, totally.
And a lot of that...
And that's very, very hard to fight, you know. I mean, I've got a 9-year-old, and I'm poor child. He's, you know, he's on the end of my paradigm. But he's totally into, you know, like that. I mean, they're not competitive, but they're very much... they're very aware of what other people have and, you know, how it sort of benefits them socially to have the right stuff and the right, you know. And it makes me... sad, but I think it's less prevalent on Waiheke. We're not as ensnared in that in that environment because we don't have McDonald's, we don't have all the,
yes,
the malls
right.
and the shops
yes,
and
exactly,
whatnot.
Exactly.
Thankfully.
Yeah. Thankfully. Absolutely right. And I think also too often it's so easy just to go online and you click online and apply for a credit card and can come back and give you a yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's just far too easy. Yep. It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. It is.
Well, Amelia, thank you very much for your time today. It's been an enlightening discussion, and I'd encourage anyone out there that's having any sort of stresses or strains to call up for a confidential discussion.
Yeah, and I should probably add, I mean, I talked about people on low incomes. You know, you don't have to be on a low income or on a benefit to come to us. I mean, we have some clients who are, you know, inverted commas, middle class, middle income, who are just in the throes of a bit of life stuff, like maybe
that's
someone's
right.
lost a job, someone's been sick, they've had another baby, and suddenly that house of cards is starting to, you know, shake a bit. We can help people like that too. You know, we can look at how they can, you know, rejig their mortgage. We connect with Nicola Hambly at Altair Insurance.
Yes,
you know, we can look at some people are on these ridiculous deals for their phones and, you know, and their internet, that these things can all be reduced.
Yes.
So it certainly isn't just for, inverted commas again, poor people. It's for anyone. We're for anyone.
And that's something that's come through, isn't it? That the you know, we do have lots of sections of as you say, the poor middle classes they have cash flow issues. They might have some equity somewhere, but they're cash poor.
Yep.
And life can throw you a curveball.
It certainly can.
Out of the blue.
And money problems can happen to anyone. It doesn't matter who you are.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Well, Amelia, look, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks.
And wish you all the very best. And a huge thanks to all the guys and girls down, I should say, the men and women down at the local budget advice.
Wakey Radio.
Now, my next guest is some of you folks might know Anne, but Anne Carr is our next guest. And just quickly, for those of you that may have just tuned in, you've tuned in to Waiheke Radio. It's a community radio station, and it is the program is Community is Island Life. We're on 107.4 FM and 88.3. So it just brings me now to my next guest, Anne Carr. Anne, welcome, and thank you for coming in today.
Thanks, Gary. You can call me Annie.
I'll call you Annie. Thanks, Annie. So, Annie, well, look, I've asked Annie in today because I have a real interest in dogs. We have a dog of our own, and I think they're a very complex and sensitive animal. And I think that when you're doing things like thinking about getting a dog, or a little puppy comes into the family, it's not just a matter of putting it in the corner, taking it to the toilet and feeding it twice a day. They are a complex little beastie, aren't they? So it would be nice, Anne, if we could just sort of maybe just go over a few tips that you might have for us. But,
sure.
But firstly, can you tell us a little bit about your association with all things canine on the island, please?
Sure. I'm an instructor with the Dog Owner Group. They were founded in 2008. And we meet at 10 o'clock at Onitangi Sports Park on a Sunday. So every Sunday we're there at 10 o'clock. And at that time, we actually charge $20 subs to join for a year. So it's really affordable. And we do agility. So that would entail setting up a ring and going over a number of little obstacles. We don't jump the dogs high because we're concerned about not hurting their legs.
Right.
And it's all just a bit of fun. We're not really competitive. It's just the dogs really enjoy dog work. They learn to go through tunnels, go over dog walks, which are and over hurdles, and we've got seesaw and different more advanced equipment. We've got puppy equipment, so they start on the puppy equipment, and they love it. And what it does, Gary, it strengthens the bond between the owner and the pup. So when or any age dog, actually. So really that's all you've got with your doggy is your connection.
Yes.
And if you can strengthen that connection by asking the dog to do something that it might perceive to be a little bit of danger, to go through a tunnel.
Yes.
But you say it's okay and you encourage it and it goes through and they really enjoy it. And then they learn that, you know, that strengthens that trust that they initially have with you, but it just reinforces that trust because what you say, then no harm will come.
And
they start to really enjoy themselves because, yeah, they've got a lot of instincts that come into play and they get exercise.
And would it be a matter of them gaining confidence as well through that process? Do you think there's such a thing as that with dogs or not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They do. With some, they're all different, obviously. In any breed, they're all different. So we just start slow. So it's always starting slow and taking very small increments. So we always use positive reinforcement and we don't use any force at all.
Right.
So if you've got a wee pup wanting to come on through a little tunnel, you would be extending your hand through the tunnel to encourage it to come towards you. And so that sort of brings me on to using positive reinforcement.
Yes.
With positive reinforcement, what we're doing, Gary, is engaging with the pup's strengths. So rather than using the human strengths, and one of ours might be language, we're using the pup's strengths. So they've got different strengths to humans, quite different, but they work well together if we were to go hunting. However, if you're going through a tunnel, if you're trying to ask the puppy to go through the tunnel, you'd be extending your hand with a what we call high smell value treat. And the reason that you'd use a wet treat, like chicken or chicken's really good actually. You could use cheese, but that might be quite high in fat.
Right.
But a wet treat has more smell than a dry treat.
Oh, okay.
So it's not about the cost of the treat. It's about how wet it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And even with humans, we can smell the difference between, say, chicken or a dry biscuit. But humans have got 5 million smell cells, and dogs have got 220 million.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Can you say that again, please?
Humans have got 5 million smell cells.
Yes.
And dogs have got 220 million.
That is absolutely phenomenal.
So you can see that's their strength. That's their initial strength is the nose.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's huge. Mm. And not to use that is actually being disrespectful to the pup.
Mm.
You know, by using a lot of language at the pup, without engaging its strength of smell.
Mm.
So with using a wet treat, you're rolling those smell particles towards that pup's nose to get it, to prime it and to get its attention.
Mm.
So, you know, you're not. That's actually what's happening in the air, obviously. The pup's also got an extra olfactory gland in the nose that we haven't even got.
Right.
So a large part of the puppy's brain is dedicated to smell.
Right, yes.
Whereas we have got virtually no smell.
Mm.
So we don't really think about smell.
Mm.
Their whole world is perceived through smell initially.
Yes.
So we're going to use that smell to prime the nose and engage with the pup to encourage it to come through the tunnel, and that'll strengthen the bond.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a process, and we start slow and go very small, small increments. So the next thing you might use would be voice to encourage the pup.
Yes.
So you might call the pup's name or your dog.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd use a high-pitched tone. And the reason for that is because humans can hear up to 20 kilohertz and dogs can hear up to 60 kilohertz.
Right.
So there's a whole 40 kilohertz up there.
Well, we see that sometimes with Baxter at home, where suddenly he'll just suddenly jump up, run out the front and start whining, looking around, and he's heard something. We have definitely not heard a thing. We're still wondering what he's responding to, so we have to let him out. He goes through a process of running around to the front of the house, checking everything's fine, then he comes back and he's quite happy, but we still haven't heard anything.
That's right.
It happens frequently.
But you have to believe them because they can hear it.
It's probably the twoies. You know, they go out of the range of the human ear, so I just put it down to the twoies half the time.
So it's really good to try to engage with that. Well, I call it the sonic range. I don't know whether it's sonic or not, just call it that. It's outside of our range. So we're going blah, blah, blah like I am now, and it's quite deep.
Yes.
As soon as you get it up high and come, it's going up there. We can't hear it go up there, but we can hear, we get a sense that it's reverberating up there in yes. that range.
Yes.
And there's quite a number of things that do reverberate up there. So mm-hmm. if you're mm-hmm. Encouraging your pup, for example, we've got the pup going through the tunnel.
Yes.
We call it in that sonic range.
Yeah, call it in the high pitch. Yeah.
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 And that will engage its hearing.
Right.
And because right. it's tuned in, that's its sort of sweet spot up there. That's
oh, yeah.
that's where they are hearing. They all of right. the rumble in what we're saying is just rumbling away. But they're actually tuned in up there because when they're outside, when they're inside, they're quite different. But when they're outside, they're sort of more into a little bit more of a hunting mode.
Right.
So all of those
right,
ancient
of course.
Instincts start to come into play. So you want to be using those to your advantage.
Mm.
So you're using the smell and you're using that sonic range.
Right, right.
So if you're calling your pup some dogs are more... easily come to voice
yes.
and language
yes.
than others. Because
mm.
some have got this amazing hearing,
mm-hmm.
and unless you're really engaging that, they're not going to really focus on the words. So if you're wanting your pup to come, just one of these little squeaky toys.
Yeah, little squeaky thing. Looks like a plastic bone.
They're like $2.
Yeah, $2, yep, yep.
That can get your pup's attention moving away from the tunnel, but say you were at the beach,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas if the wind's coming the wrong way or
that's
whatever,
right.
it may not be hearing you.
Yes, yes, yes.
The other one to use is the
a whistle.
Dog whistle.
Yep.
And I got this from Putiki Vets.
Yes, yes.
They're really good.
Yeah,
now,
that's
it's
very
not
high-pitched,
gonna drop
isn't it?
The person next to you dead.
No, it's not, is it?
Which, if you blew a marching whistle, it would.
Yeah,
the person
of
next to you would go... Oh, my God.
Yeah, what was that about?
You know, why
yeah.
are you doing that? That's right in my ear.
That's intrusive, yeah.
But this one's right up there. It's just enough in the human range that we can hear it.
Yeah.
So we know that it's blown. But it's right in that sweet
spot. In the zone for them.
Yeah.
So they get the whole lot.
Yeah. And
interesting.
Because they're tuned in to hearing, they can hear, you know, mice and rabbits squeak, squeak, you know. But we
yes.
can hardly hear it.
Of course. Of course.
But they're right in there. And
yeah.
that's what they're sort of listening for. So if you make, when they're outside, so if you make a noise, you're going to engage with them by using their sort of primal instincts that are already there.
Actually, we sort of learnt that through our guy because he's a fairly, well, everyone would say this about their dog. He's a pretty smart boy. But we all say that about our dogs. And our children are the same, I suppose. Everyone thinks their kids are a bit higher than average. And I guess we all think our dogs are a bit better than average. But it's human nature, I guess. But with him, we've used that that whistle approach that you've heard where he was a little guy and he didn't necessarily enjoy coming to us all the time. He liked to, he had a wee bit of a mind of his own. So we associated a particular squeaky toy with a treat.
That's the one.
And every time, and we didn't use it very often, but when we squeaked the toy, we gave him a particular treat. And even now, he's now 4 years old, if we pull out, it's actually an alligator. It's a plastic alligator, so it's a squeaky alligator. When the squeaky alligator comes out and you get a squeak, but no matter what he's doing, it doesn't matter, he rockets over and he waits for his little bit of whatever the treat's going to be. So you're right, sound is so effective for them, isn't it?
I actually should have said that, Gary, you're quite right. You do need to pair it with a treat. You know, before you leave the house, like I've put you out on the field trying to get through a tunnel, but before you leave the house, doing little exercises with the whistle or the squeaky toy or your high-pitched voice. The high-pitched voice is good with women and children, but a lot of men can't quite get there. So this is my husband's lead, dog lead, and whistle.
It's
but
ideal.
I can do the high pitch quite a lot.
Actually, something we bought recently was quite good was the old-fashioned shepherd's whistle, which we use every now and then, especially if he's down the beach and the wind's blasting.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's actually quite a handy thing to
it
have because it cuts through that wind.
It does, and it also cuts through the attention that the dog is focusing on something else because it's actually out there in that sort of hunting mode, listening for prey, and you're making the sound of a prey.
Mm.
So you're going to,
of course.
I mean, they're not actively out there praying, but their ancient tuning is you're keying into that.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, on your roller.
Right, so Annie, back on to doggies, all things canine, and talking around instruction once again, and perhaps talking more around the physical signals that we can give our puppies and dogs.
Sure. So if you're thinking of dogs in terms of, you know, their ancient programming and their instincts, they don't see things that are stationary. So that's where, you know, a lot of rabbits and different prey animals will stay very, very, very still.
Right, yes.
As soon as they move a whisker, the dog notices them. So we can use that to our advantage. A lot of people aren't very animated, and the part that we use mostly for animation is our hands. So we can use hand signals. So if we consciously use hand signals, so we want to be using the nose, the ears, and movement to engage with the part with the dog.
Yes.
We will use language, and they will learn language. Mm. Ideally, they will learn language within about a year.
Yes.
And they will start to get more words. But you want to be able to get the puppy to understand basic education of come, sit down, and before that time, because if in order to manage the pup when you're out,
yes,
you need it to be able to understand different things. So you're going to use body language.
Mm.
So the more you move, the more the pup's attracted to you. So if you're, say, at the beach and you're trying to call the pup, and there might be a little kitty a little bit further on down, and you're trying to call your pup in.
Yes.
So you'll be using your you've already let the pup know that you've got a high smell value treat with you, like chicken. Like you amplify and fade. So you start with a really high smell value until you get reliability. And then you can start to fade that. But you'd start out with, say, chicken.
Right.
So you want to take all your tools with you when you go out.
Mm.
And you've already done your homework at home. So the dog knows that when you call, it's going to get something. And you're priming the nose.
Yes.
And then you're going to engage the ears with a high pitch, with whatever you may need. Might be your voice, might be the squeaky toy.
Yes.
And then you're going to use movement with your hands and onto your body. And I do, you know, sort of like a running on the spot, because they can see movement. They're attracted to movement.
Yes.
They can't resist it. They can't resist the nose, the ears, and the movement.
Yes.
So you've got them. You know,
yeah, that's right.
You're engaging with them on their terms.
I mean, all you've got to do is watch the many dogs at the beach, and as soon as a seagull moves or an oyster catcher moves, they're off, and it's just that movement they catch out of the corner of their eye, and they're gone.
That's right.
That's
and if you
instinct.
Using these things regularly, so you want to be teaching the dog through the day at home with lots of praise.
Yes.
Then it's a habit. It becomes a habit. So you do everything about three times, and then you're instilling a habit. And before it knows what it's doing, it's responding. And then you've got control.
Have you found that certain, without naming any breeds, but well, if you want to, I don't know, but certain breeds are different to others with regard to picking up that the commands and for example, I know our guy, he's a wee bit of a mix, but he really wasn't until he was about two, nearly three, before he really, really started to be, you know, 95% responsible. And now he's almost every time we ask him to do something, he does. But it seemed to take forever to get him there. You know, I just wonder whether certain breeds are better than others.
I don't think it's the breed so much, Gary.
Right.
I think
right.
All dogs are different within their breeds.
Yes, yes.
A lot of people, we don't realise that we're doing it, but we're relying on language, and it can take a year to a year and a half for the dog to actually learn words.
Right.
They're actually learning them in a little scene, so they're learning, you know, what you're wearing, what you've picked up, what you're about to do.
Sure.
They're learning it in a little scene. Dogs can generalise learning, but they don't generalise learning well. So humans are really good at generalising learning. So if you're teaching your dog at home to sit, maybe before it gets its dinner, which is always a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
So you want to do it always through the day when it's being fed. That's always an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily going to understand that you're asking the same thing when it's out on the field. When it's out on the field or at the beach, you've got a different scene. The stove's not there. You're in a different place. Everything's different.
Yes.
You haven't got the bowl in front of you. It's actually learned. It hasn't learned the word sit necessarily. It's learned that it must put its bottom down to get its dinner.
Yes, right.
But if you are not holding the dinner,
right,
then you might sort of think, well, why are you being naughty? Well, it's not being naughty. It just never really did understand the word sit. But if you using sit with a hand signal going up, so if you take the nose up, that pops the bottom down.
Oh, yeah, of course it would do, yeah.
It does on everybody.
Yes, yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah, and if you're using a tone, engaging those ears with a high pitch, so you can duplicate that down on the beach, and you're doing the same scene, so you've got to teach everything in all different situations. So you've got to give the dog they're just trying to please.
Yeah.
They've got different strengths to people. Like, their eyes are quite different. If humans can see colour. Dogs can see blue and yellow.
Right.
They see better at night. We've got three cones in our eyes, and so we see more colours. They've got two cones.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Prey animals use that for camouflage. Like, they're not really seeing detail. They see movement. We can see detail. We've got really good eyesight compared to dogs, and we've got perspective by being higher.
Right.
They're much, obviously, lower. And so it's not, if you want to engage their eyesight, you need to use movement.
Right.
Once they're 50 meters away, they're not really going to pick it up. You need to start before. You need to keep your dog close, actually. The further away you start to lose the opportunity. So you need to be engaging with it close and playing with it and keeping it. You can't really just walk along and expect it to. You've got to be engaging with it all the time. And giving it that habit of staying with you, because something good's going to happen. What might happen is that you might pop behind a rock and then call it and play a bit of hide and seek.
Yeah, they love that.
So that adds a little bit of tension because you've got the connection between you and your dog that you've been strengthening with the agility.
Yes.
And then you're going to add a little bit of tension to that connection by disappearing every now and then, and so the pup needs to keep an eye on where are you.
Yes.
You'll call it and it'll hear you, and you might leave half of you out so it can see you behind the rock, and then you'll give it a treat when it gets there. So that can happen randomly through a walk where you disappear or half disappear, and it makes a big game. You want lots of hype, lots of fun. So all of those other things, like children and other dogs and people, a secondary, because you are much more fun.
And the play thing's huge. I mean, I think about the rewards that police dogs get for good behaviour or a good job done, and basically they just get some playtime.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's the reward. It's not a bone or a sausage or anything like that. They just get to play with the boss for a while.
That's right.
You know, and that's all they want to do, isn't it?
They do, they might want to play a little bit of tug.
Yeah.
So you'd be playing with your pup at home as well. So the pups do reflect the family culture.
Yes, yes, they do.
So you need to keep it
fervently
light.
Believe that. Yep.
Don't get into any negativity, because that can actually it can make problems. It can make phobias. Your best just to keep it light and manage it positively. Mm. Manage everything. Mm. It's about managing your dog, and manage everything positively and think it through yourself, using the dog's strengths. But so you need to be a little bit careful with tug and with play, because you don't want to get a lot of tug games going on and play where the dog's on top of you and doing play fighting. You don't really want to get involved in play fighting at all. It's something that you don't want to grow.
No, absolutely.
You want to keep, you know, suppress that. So, you know, your family culture's all about light and love and praise and praising. Just if the dog's lying down, you know, down, good dog.
Yeah.
You know, keeping it light.
Would it be? I mean, I've observed our guy, and if there's sort of suddenly a noise in the house, like for example, we might be watching rugby and something's going on, and I go, oh, you know, like this, you know, to the rugby, he'll come running in thinking there's something wrong. And is he doing that because he thinks I'm directing my frustration at him, or is it just a general concern for what might be going on? The reality is I'm sitting there and the All Blacks have just, you know, mucked up a try or something, but he doesn't know that. All he hears is the sound of frustration, and he definitely responds to that, and it does concern him. So is he thinking, gee, that's something directed at me, or is there a threat within the house, I need to go and check that out? What's going on there?
Well, I'm not a dog psychologist, Gary. I do puppy education, but I think what may have happened is that your voice is raised up into the sonic. He's heard a little bit of that.
Right.
I did it this morning. I just put something down on the dressing table and the next minute barking.
Right.
Because it has that that repercussion.
Right,
they're hearing it, and it goes up into that sonic range, and so they've changed mode then. They're on to alert mode.
That's very interesting, isn't it? It's very interesting.
But, well, you know, as I say, there is a dog psychologist that does come to the island for dog behaviour problems.
Yeah, really?
What I do is try to prevent problems from arising in the first place with positive using positive reinforcement and engaging with the pup using its strengths.
Right.
So if we, you know, educate the pup, and socialising is huge. I mean, first of all, you really need to exercise your pup before you even do any education.
Right.
So it's exercise, and it's exercise every day.
Yeah, our guy needs at least 1-2 runs a day. And if he doesn't get a run for whatever reason, then you notice it in him in the next day. He's just a bit fired up, and you know, he's running around, and he just wants to do something. It's just that energy.
And they get rid of a lot more energy if you're socialising them with other dogs, because it's mental energy as well.
Right.
And it also helps them be well-adjusted if you're socialising them with other dogs. They need to be exposed to every thing that you can, actually, you know, consciously exposing them to every experience. But socialising them with other dogs, it helps them understand how to get along with other dogs. And because dogs have got their own etiquette, which is very different to human etiquette, where you and I greet, we look at each other in the eye.
That's right.
That could be a threat if you were to do that to a dog.
And that leads on to some really interesting areas that we might just play another track, but I'd like to just explore some of those areas around what you're talking about and around body language and things like that. So
you're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Right, Annie, back to our subject today, all about our canine friends. And we wanted to move on to a little bit about moving on to physical communication and also areas of things like body language and the things they're trying to tell us that we often don't even see.
Sure. So if we think about dog etiquette and human etiquette, they're very different. Very different approaches, where I might look at you, we were saying I might look you in the eye when I meet you. If I was to do that to a dog I didn't know, it might feel threatened. Dogs don't actually stare at each other in the eye. That's a threat. So they do what they call, the dogs don't call it, but humans call it a look away, where they're scanning around, and their eyes are never actually staring at each other, because that's giving each other the message that they're friendly and passive. But to be staring in the eye is the opposite. So
we've got quite different
etiquette, where humans little babies actually are very programmed into faces. You know, babies are attracted to faces.
Yes, yes.
And you, I've actually demonstrated this at puppy education where, you know, if you consider a little baby, you see them toddling around, maybe a little 2-year-old or 1.5 to 2-year-old, and they want to look directly into the face. Children do that right from birth.
They do. They look an instinct, for a face. Isn't it? Natural, yeah.
So they might toddle in front of the pup and then they will sort of like crouch down and look directly into the face. Mm-hmm. And I've done that with little darling little pups that you would, you know, really passive little pups. Yes. And they feel threatened.
Yeah, they would. It's only natural. Yeah,
they do. And their natural reaction is to, you know, just sort of tell you not to by giving you
a little nudge
and you know, it's because you've threatened them.
You know, I often say, and this is about all animals, whether it's cats or dogs or horses or whatever else, you know, we've got speech and two hands and everything else to manipulate our environment with and communicate with. A dog, for example, has very few things to manipulate environment with other than its mouth and maybe its paws, you know, and it's pretty limited
and
options.
Their tail,
you know.
Everything.
So those three things can are the way really that they connect the world.
We don't tune into their tail much either. Their tail's telling each other everything, they do a lot of body language to each other all of the time.
Yes.
So if you've got two dogs meeting each other, you want to get the sharp end and the blunt end together.
Right.
So you don't want two sharp ends together.
No, that's
because
that's
going to be a little bit of conflict.
Okay.
So if your dog's on a lead or whatever, you just turn it so that the blunt end and the sharp end, so you've got the positive and the negative.
Right.
So you don't want two positives going.
Sure. Okay.
And it's the same if you're meeting a dog, not quite the same, but it's
so if you're walking up Milan, to a, so if I'm walking up to a dog that I don't know, it's a scenario, okay, yeah.
Cesar Millan put out a wonderful book called Caesar's Rules, and I mean, you just take out of anything what you will.
What you want, yeah.
That was actually the global experts, you know, the techniques that they use.
Yes.
So if you are meeting a dog, Cesar Millan says no touch, no talk, no eye contact.
Right.
So that's a really sort of respectful thing to do, even if the dog's really wagging its tail and quite friendly. Just for a moment, let it approach you without trying to touch it, talking to it, or staring it down. You know.
What I was taught at quite a young age, because I grew up around a lot of different animals. It was that when you're meeting a dog, for example, for the first time, it's good to stand there. Just hold your hand out slightly at the bottom with the back of your hand.
Yeah.
And just don't move and then let the dog approach you and sniff the back of your hand while you're holding it sort of like curled up in a fist. Was that good advice?
That is good advice.
Okay.
You can also turn sort of 3/4 onto the dog so that you're not, you're wider, you're not sort of confronting it front on. You're sort of making yourself more approachable by being 3/4 onto the dog.
Oh, yes. Okay.
But if you've got a little kitty with you, you need to ask the kitty to ask the dog owner, can I pet your dog?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the child needs to learn to say that.
That's really important. I mean, we've been out, and I'll say this, we've been out in the community with our guy, and, you know, it's really rewarding when children are engaging with your dog. It's such a lovely experience for everybody. And we've had lots of lovely moments with that sort of thing. But sometimes, you know, kids come up and they're excited and they're all limbs flailing, looking at the dog straight into the zone, right into his face. And our guy tends to just kind of, ooh, and he'll stop. He won't do anything because he's one of those, you know. But at the end of the day, you can kind of see where sometimes things can go wrong.
That's right.
If the dog's caught by surprise or doesn't know what's going on. And it's not really, you know, it's just a good awareness to have, I think.
That's right.
It?
So you need to manage the situation by taking the child's hand yourself as the dog's owner and directing the child's hand down to the dog's chest so that the dog can see. It can't see. If you come arriving at the top between the ears and on the neck, that's challenging and threatening the dog because it can't see your hand. And that's actually the part of the body that's most vulnerable,
yes,
with the neck.
Yes.
So you're directing the child's hand to the chest and you just say to the child, chest is best,
yeah,
and let the dog sniff.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
Mm.
But if you're out with your dog and you maybe you've taught your dog the basic education of down or whatever, and you're going to the cafe and you, I mean, it's just magic on the island. I mean, we're in heaven. We're in dog heaven. We're in human heaven. The dogs can enjoy the beach. We can take them to the cafe and sit outside.
You want
to think about the situation because we need to be respecting people all the time.
Absolutely.
Who either have or haven't got dogs.
Not everybody is a dog fan, let's face it.
That's
so
right.
We need to respect people's space.
Are weary.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you need to manage the dog by putting it away from the door.
Yes.
So find a little corner where it can lie down comfortably and it knows that the whole point of teaching it the education is that you can now use it and ask your dog to sit and down and it will and wait and just keeping it away from the general traffic and keeping your dog on the lead.
Yes.
It doesn't matter whether your dog is as safe as houses and 100%, which they are. It's other people's right not to be to have roaming dogs.
Correct.
A lot of people are wary of dogs, and if they want to come and say hello to your dog, they can approach it, and you can say either yes or no. But your dog shouldn't be going up to people who are sitting anywhere. Not on a lead. It should be on the lead.
And I would agree with that. And as dog owners, we all have a huge responsibility because we are responsible for the well-being of that dog and the environment that he or she is in. So I think education for a dog owner is a massive, massively important point. And did you have a couple other key points there as well that you wanted to touch on?
I think we
got through most of it. I think probably one of the things also that I'd just like to probably finish up with is that dogs are always communicating to us, and he's the first dog we've ever had, and he was a wee pound pup, etc. But anyway, look, we've learned a lot through him, and he's always communicating. We've learned, like, even when he looks like he's not doing anything, he's still communicating. I reckon 90% of the time he's communicating to us, even when he's lying on the couch.
Yes.
And you've got to look for those little subtle indicators,
don't you?
It's
very rewarding. I mean, they do all sorts of wonderful things of smiling, and our dog does what we call blowing her horn. She fills her muzzle up with air and goes,
really?
Cute. And when they're doing that play bell, that's the I love you.
Yes.
You know, they, when you arrive, they'll give you the play bell.
It's all good fun.
You know, there's no reason that we can't have harmony, and it's just about treating the dogs well. They reflect that again.
And I think, you know, when people do decide to take a dog into the family, they've got to realise it doesn't stay a little cute pup forever, and it is really a huge responsibility.
That's right, and you've got to do exercise, education, and then affection. That's the Cesar Millan. We don't go by everything that everybody else says. You can do whatever you like, but that makes sense. Exercise, education, and then affection. Because once they've had their exercise, then they're ready to learn. And when after they've had their little education, well, then they can have big cuddle.
And they can have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Annie, look, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm sure there's been some really useful tips in there for folks out there. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Island Life. I'm Gary, and we are on 107.4 FM or 88.3. And before our next guests come in, we'll play you... Actually, we just might just add one more wee thing in before we go. Annie?
I was just going to say, if anybody wants any help or just basic education, my number's 6362. So, or I've got a mobile, but, you know, landline 6362.
6362.
And the dog owner group is at Onitangi Sports Park every Sunday at 10 o'clock. So we do agility, fly ball, rally-o, and socialising walks. We could have talked that out a bit more, but come along. Everybody's welcome. Dogs must be registered and vaccinated.
So your number again, Annie?
6362.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Wonderful.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7pm and Thursdays at 12:30pm. Island Life is brought to you by the Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.